You are listening to Right on Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at KFAI.org. I'm Josh Weber. Tonight,
Liz Olds talks with Matt Bell, author of Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in 3 Drafts.
Matt, can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. You said you had an introduction to your book that you wanted to share with us.
Oh, I can definitely do that. Yeah. I'm ready if you are.
Pardon me?
I'm ready if you are.
Yes. Go right ahead.
Great. My book, Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in 3 Drafts, is a guide to novel writing seen through the lens of revision and rewriting, looking at the path from sort of initial conception of the book all the way through the final draft that you would send to readers or agents or editors.
Okay, that's great. You say one of the first things a novelist needs to do is to say to himself, perhaps stand in front of the mirror and say to him or herself, I am a writer, I am writing a novel. How does this basic affirmation get one off to the right foot?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's a real struggle when you're writing a novel, especially writing your first novel, is that you don't always have a lot of proof that you can do it. I think people have struggled to claim the title of like writer, like the idea like, am I a writer, makes people feel kind of anxious. It's something that feels like it needs outside affirmation. But I really love the idea of like the verb writing, like I'm writing a novel, which is something you're kind of either doing or you're not. So anytime you're writing, you can claim that for yourself. It's just an act you're doing. So any day that you sit down to work on your book is a day you're writing a novel. And I think that that's easier to hold on to than the idea of like being a novelist or being a writer, because it's something you can claim for yourself. And I think there's something really powerful in just claiming those actions. And those are something we're doing as opposed to something we're being. And I think that's an easier thing to hold on to at the beginning of the process.
Now, you kind of suggest not outlining, but I'm wondering if you could talk about the pros and cons, because you did talk about some pros of outlining too, of outlining.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's many different ways to write a novel, and certainly the way I outline in the book, I'm now using outline, it's not the only way to do it. But I think for me, I mostly have not started with outlines, but I've started sometimes with an image that I'm interested in exploring. Sometimes I know a little bit about my character. Sometimes I think more often I know like the setting that I want to explore. And I think what I really think of a first draft as is an exploratory draft, that I'm discovering the novel by writing the novel, that I'm finding the material by looking at the material. I do outline in my process, and the process I describe in the book, in the second draft. And what I do is I outline the draft already written, and then I use that outline as a guide for revision, to use that to sort of study what I've made and to imagine a better version of it. I think it's really hard to know before you start what the book is or what the book wants to be. There's this idea from Richard Hugo where he's a poet, but he talks about in poetry, the triggering subject and the real subject. And that the triggering subject is what makes you want to write the book. So you start with that. And then at some point, there's a turn towards sort of the real subject or the real version of the book. And I think sometimes outlining before you start makes it harder to make that turn because you're a little over sure of what the book is. And by being a little more flexible or a little more exploratory in the first draft, it's easier to arrive at like the best possible version of the book.
You suggest, too, using, well, this is an improv tool, the yes and improv tool, mm-hmm. and you talk about that in the book. Why don't you describe what that tool is and how it helps with writing the book?
Sure. In improv, the idea of yes and is simply that you're working on stage with a partner, you're creating a story without any guidelines, without knowing what's going to happen, and the first person to speak posits a scenario. Maybe say like, I'm a janitor on a space station. And if the other person says, no, you're not, then the story ends. And that's sort of the end of the thing. So, it's, you know, if you shut down that initial inspiration, but if the second person says, yes, you are a janitor on a space station and the gravity's just gone off, then you're in the middle of a story. And so one of the things I suggest is like kind of cultivating that yes and thought, even with yourself, so that you write something on day one and the next day you sit down and look at it. And instead of saying like, no, this is a bad idea, I shouldn't write this book, you say yes to your ideas that are already on the page, and then you try to add to them. So you yes and yourself. What I find with students often is a lot of my students who are writing short stories try to write stories all in one sitting. Mm-hmm. Because they have trouble coming back to it the second day. They come back the second time and they go, oh, maybe this wasn't a good idea, and they give up. But if you're going to write a novel, you really can't write it all in one day, or you probably can't write it all one day. And so learning to come back to the work and to be excited about it and to build on what's there and what's already working feels like a really essential tool for a novelist.
You have a lot of suggestions, a lot, especially for the first draft, and then more for the second and third. But what suggestions do you think are the best ones for, I realize this is asking you what your favorite child is, but what are some of the ones that you like the best, especially right now, we were talking about the first draft, let's talk about the first draft, for sure. Moving forward or getting yourself rolling with this first draft?
You know, I think one of the things that's hardest in the first draft is kind of suspending judgment. I think a lot of us want to know, especially when you're sitting off on like a big project, like writing a novel that could take several years, you want to know in advance, is it good? Is it worth doing? Will it succeed? And I'm not sure you get to know that at the beginning. And so one of the things you're trying to do is suspend judgment for as long as you can. That you're sort of letting the thing be what it needs to be. And I think part of that is trying to follow your own excitement, rather than like what you think other people might like or what you think might be sellable to editors or publishing houses, that you're really just trying to follow your own joy and your own wonder and your own interest. There's an idea in the book that comes from a novelist named Charlie Smith that he called Writing the Island. And I think this is one of like the most key suggestions for first draft. And what Smith meant by writing the island was that you write the part of the book that you can see and that you're interested in right now, rather than trying to get to that part, rather than trying to save that for later, that you spend it all right now, that you put the scene you're most excited about down on the page. I've been giving a lecture version of this book a lot this spring, and one of the things that always lights people off in the audience is I say, most of you are probably here writing a first novel because there's like one scene you really want to write. Like that's the reason you're writing your book. And then I ask how many people have written that yet. And it's almost always, almost no one, right? They haven't quite written the thing that's like the reason they're writing the book. And I think the Writing the Islands idea is if you get it down on the page, more good ideas will come. That by making room, by writing that, you make room for other things. It also means that your manuscript contains the thing you're most excited about. You're going to rewrite it anyway. You're going to revise it anyway. You can't ruin it by trying to write it. I think that's really important. It's a way of staying in contact all the time with what's most interesting or vital to you in your own manuscript. And that seems like a way to, you know, you have to stay in love with the book for a long time to write it. And by writing the things you're most excited about all the time, that's one of the ways you do that in the early going.
It sounds like sometimes the younger writers almost want to punish themselves by writing the hard stuff first and not giving themselves the joy of writing the islands, as you say.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, or even the idea of that they have to like prove everything before that they have to somehow like earn it or get to it. I think there's a real fear in not just young writers, but writers of all ages, that we're not good enough to write the books you want to write, that we're not good enough to write the scenes you want to write. But I think the truth is you become the writer you want to be by writing the books you want to write. Every book I've written is something that I feel like I'm not really ready for when I start out, or I feel like I can't do it. I was just today facing in the book I'm writing now, the like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to figure this out? In some ways, it never gets easier, but the exciting thing is sort of moving into that sort of doubt and moving into that learning. I saw maybe 10 years ago, the writer Ann Carson, who's one of my favorite writers, give a talk. And, you know, she's written novels and poetry, and she's a critic, and she's a translator. She does all this different stuff. And someone in the audience asked her, like, why have you written so many different kinds of books? And she just looked straight at them and said, like, every time you write a book, you learn how to write that book. And when you're done learning how to write that book, you learn how to write another book. Mm-hmm. And I was like, right. That's kind of the goal, as opposed to something to like wait for or to flee from, that we want to be growing by writing. And so, writing toward the things that are most exciting to us instead of avoiding them is one of the ways we become the writers and the people we want to be.
We're speaking with Matt Bell here tonight on Write On Radio on his book, Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in 3 Drafts. You know, when I read that title first, I thought it said 3 days, and I was like, oh, good, I want to know how to write a novel in 3 days. You know? But then I got into the book and was like, no, it's 3 years maybe, or maybe more than that. So...
yeah, I Michael Moorcock is a science fiction and fantasy writer, at the beginning of his career, wrote books in 3 days. And there's this great interview where he talks about how to do it that I've learned a lot from, but while also never wanting to write a book in 3 days. But he had this whole process for like, if you're set up in this way, you can write 60,000 words in like a weekend. But that seems tough and maybe not advisable for most of us.
I can't see doing it. we were talking a little bit about this, or you were talking a little bit about this when you were talking about the book you're working on now. But what I want to ask is, and you address this in the book and in some places, what do you do when you get stuck? What do you do, you know, when you're facing the page and it just looks blank and nothing's coming?
Yeah, which does happen, right? I mean, it's, in some ways, it's just one of the things that's going to happen in every project. You lose steam for a little bit. You have parts where it doesn't go well. I wrote 2 novels before my first published novel, but when I was writing the first draft of my first novel that got published, I remember like halfway through it this month where like my enthusiasm was just really low, and I felt like this isn't very good. I'm going to be able to see it when I go back. I'm going to be able to see this month where I wasn't that enthused about the book. And, you know, I think in the end, it wasn't really that much different than the rest of it. We all have days we're not enthused about our jobs, and we do them pretty well anyway, right? And sometimes the days we're most enthused aren't any better than others. I do think there are ways to get unstuck. When I teach novel writing classes, I assign students to write about 2,500 words a week, or 500 words 5 days a week. And that's about 2 pages double space.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I suggest when every day starting out by revising like the last 3 pages that you wrote. And if you do that, it means you're always kind of going back like a day and a half, and you're sort of remembering what you've done and leading yourself back toward the kind of blank edge of the page. And I think that that's really helpful. This is something that's not in the book, so just be an extra thing. I assigned my students this semester these 3 scenes to write when they were stuck. And they're all about making your characters act and also seeing them in relationship to other people. So these are 3 scenes that are about your character's relationship to their own power and to other people's power. And so I had students write a scene in which their protagonist does something to someone else, which means they act upon them, a scene in which the protagonist does something for someone else, which means they act on their behalf, and then a scene in which the protagonist has something done to them, where they're acted upon and then they react. And those 3 scenes are all create cause and effect, which is usually the reason you're stuck, is because there isn't any sort of causality happening in your book. There isn't, this scene isn't making necessary the next scene. And by writing these scenes in which characters are acting and choosing and doing things, it's one of the ways to get your book in motion again.
So would you say that lots of descriptive passages about the beauty of the mountains is not necessarily good for the book, or it can be in places?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a nature writer to some extent. I don't mind a passage about the beauty of the mountains. I think the main thing is the descriptive passages should reveal something about the characters, right? That the person seeing that beautiful mountain is a character who sees it in a particular way. We were talking at the beginning of this conversation about like not outlining. And one of the interesting things to me is that if you just describe things through the eyes of a character, through the mind of a character, that even when you're just describing a mountain, that mountain tells you something about the person who's seeing it. It's not neutral, right? That each of us would describe that same mountain in a different place. Some people would hate being on the mountain, right? That they wouldn't see it as a beautiful mountain. And so there's nothing wrong with scenery. There's nothing wrong with setting. In fact, setting, of course, is one of the most powerful tools. But it works by revealing itself through the lens of a character. So anytime someone's seeing something and feeling something about that setting, then you're probably okay as long as you're moving toward action and choice and change.
I had a teacher once tell me not to start a book writing about the weather, but we live in Minnesota up here, and the weather is very important to us. So I feel like it's okay to start a book by writing about the weather.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how many conversations start with the weather, right? I mean, it's the one thing we all share is the weather we're under. I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in Michigan.
Oh, right.
And lived in the, now I live in Arizona, which are, you know, two extremely different sort of weathers. And I had trouble when I first moved to Arizona because there like wasn't enough weather to trigger my Midwestern emotions and memories. So I think being a Minnesotan thinking about the weather feels very correct to me.
Okay. I have another question here. You talk about this and it's a question you posit, and I'm wondering if you could kind of answer it, which is what is a first draft and what is not a first draft?
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I think for me, like a first draft, especially if it's your first novel, ideally you write all the way till you have a beginning and a middle and an end. I really see over and over that that writing a whole first draft creates confidence in you as a writer, even if that book doesn't turn out, even if that book isn't publishable or even really readable. Some people, having gone the distance, having written the whole 300 pages or whatever it is, convinces you that you can do it again, so that when you have another idea or maybe a better idea or something that means something more to you, that you'll be able to go that sort of distance. If I was writing a first novel again, that would be my goal, to have a beginning, middle, and end. If you have 90% of one, it's not the same thing. I think, you know, as I've gone on writing, I write more partial first drafts. Although I always worry that I'm flinching a little bit. But I sometimes I can see like, okay, I've discovered enough about it. Now I need to stop and outline and plan. But I think, yeah, if I'd never written a novel before, I would try to get a version of the whole thing down, even if it's not perfect, because I think that will give you all the confidence you need to sort of go forward from there.
Let's move on to the second draft. But I'm wondering, you suggest something to be done between the first draft and the second draft to make it go well. What is that?
Yeah, we talked just a little bit at the beginning, but I think my first step in the second draft is to make an outline of the first draft. So rather than outlining before I start, I outline what I've already made, and then I revise that outline into a plan for a better second draft. And I think it's trying to get the most you can out of that organic, exploratory first draft, and then also create a well-structured, well-plotted book that you want to have both those things sort of happen. And then I, after I have that outline done, I take it and I rewrite the book from scratch, which is always the part that feels really daunting to say to people. And from scratch means a couple things. I do keep usually the first draft around. I let myself retype things from it, but I don't copy and paste things from the first draft into the second, out of the belief that copying and pasting is not rewriting. That you'll copy and paste a scene that isn't working or a sentence that isn't very good, but you will get tired of retyping scenes that aren't working, and you will rewrite them to make them better. If you're a person who handwrites and then types in, you're already doing a version of this, right? You're sort of like rewriting as you're typing in what you wrote. And the goal for this, there's an Amy Tan quote where Amy Tan said, "The second draft is written in the voice of all that happened." And that when you're writing that second draft, you're writing it not trying to figure out what happens in the book, but with this knowledge of what happens in the book. And some of that's in the first draft, some of it's in the outline, and it sort of combines into this more full conception of what you're trying to do while you're writing that second draft. For me, I think that's actually the place where the most work gets done. The really crucial thing for me has been to do that. And it's been really interesting both learning how many other writers I know do some version of that. Lauren Groff, who's one of my favorite novelists, told me once that she writes the first draft by hand. She puts it in a drawer. She never looks at it again, and she types the second draft on the computer. I've never been quite that brave, but I really think that there's something to that. Since this book has come out a couple months ago, I know a lot of writers who've been trying it. It's been really interesting to see how many people have found this to be like really changing their book for the better. There really is something about the act of rewriting as opposed to just revising, to just tinkering, that gets a fuller effect, especially in this transition between the first and second draft.
You the thing about the fascinating thing to me was the thing about the outliners and using the outliners for different kinds of things, different colors of outliners for you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I think this is one of my favorite parts of the process, maybe, for me. This is like late in the book when it's all plot complete, it's all structured pretty well, and I'm just trying to make it the best it can be. I'll print out a draft, and I'll go through, and I'll use highlighters to note a couple different things in the book. For instance, I'll highlight all of the backstory in the book, all the flashbacks. I'll go through and I'll highlight all the explanations in the book where the narrator's explaining something to the reader. And what I do with both of those is I really try to get rid of as much as possible. Hemingway famously had his iceberg theory that when you're reading a book or reading a story, you only see like 10% of it. The other 90% is sort of hidden from view, but you feel it. And I think when I was younger, I thought you were just supposed to be like a genius who could like intuit the other 90%, right? And not have to put it on the page. But I think what really happens for most of us is we make the whole iceberg and then we remove a lot of it. So we want characters to think from their backstory, that when you write those flashbacks, you're making your characters' memories, but you don't necessarily have to include them all. The reader will still feel them, which I find really fascinating. And the other highlighter thing that I love, and I think it's as daunting and interesting, is I will go through the entire manuscript, whether it's a short story or novel, whatever I'm working on, and I will highlight the weakest sentence in every paragraph, which doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's not as good as the other stuff. And then I will try to delete all of those weakest sentences with the goal of leaving the better part of the book on the page and getting rid of the worst percentage of it. My last novel, Appleseed, the final version of it has 2,500 paragraphs in it. And I did this to that book. So at some point I went through the book and I took out the 2,500 weakest sentences. Of course, I had to write some stuff back into some of those places, but a lot of it just came out and the book got tighter and what was left in the page was better. And it's just a way of finding the things that you can go without, finding the things that don't have to be there, and leaving the best possible version of your book on the page.
But you save all that stuff in your, what do you call it, your deleted file, your trash file or something like that. You save everything, it sounds like.
I do. I think, well, I keep a cut file, and I call it different things from different books. But I think... well, two things. One is like sometimes there's good stuff that gets cut and you can find another place in the book for it. You can use it somewhere else. But I think part of it is just a confidence trick because it's over here in the cut file. I don't worry that I've deleted something that's really great, right? Like I can have it back if I want it back. I very, very rarely take stuff out of the cut file. But I think it gives me a license to sort of be ruthless with myself because I know it's not really gone if I need it. I do late in the draft look through the cut file and see, like, is there anything I still love here? I feel sort of affectionate toward. Can I find a home for it? But a lot of it goes, and that's okay. I think that's just part of the process.
We are running out of time. I can't believe it. I have so many more questions. well, I love the book. I'm a writer myself, if I may. So I love the book.
Yeah, thank you.
What do you say for draft 3, kind of briefly, because we're running out of time?
Yeah, you know, I think draft 3 for me is really about the turn from the writer-based version of the book to the reader-based version. You just want the reader to have the best experience they can. And I think there's an interesting sort of letting go in that, you know, as it sort of becomes for other people instead of for you. The very last thing I suggest people do with their draft, the last moment before they send it to readers or their agents or editors, whatever you're going to do with the book when you're done with it, is to read it aloud, cover to cover yourself, which might take a couple of days. It usually takes a couple of days for me. And the reason for that is you'll find a couple things you could edit. You'll find a couple things you could change. But at the end of the process, you've been so enmeshed in this book for so long. It's been a long time since you've seen the whole thing or you've experienced the whole thing. And it's hard to read on the page anymore. You're like skimming it by that point often. And by reading it aloud, you get this kind of embodied version of your book. And you get to like feel the thing you've made. You get to have like the best version of it you made before you gave it to other people. And it feels like a gift that the novelist sort of owes themselves as they're finishing the process. Actually, I always find it like very moving to sort of have that experience, like, you know, the couple of days before I send it to my agent. And I really hope people do that or something like it for themselves so that you can really feel this incredible achievement that writing a novel is. No matter what happens within the world, to write a novel is an incredible, incredible act. And so that's one of the ways you get to feel it before you pass it on to other people.
That's the joy of it, I think. Reading out loud is really pretty wonderful, I think. We've been speaking with Matt Bell, author of Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Revise a Novel in 3 Drafts. We didn't talk much about your personal novels. What's coming up next for you?
The paperback of my novel, Appleseed, will be out July 5th, I believe, so a month or so away. And then I'm working on the next novel after that. So hopefully I'll be able to follow my own advice and bring it to a good end.
Matt, thank you so much for coming on Write on Radio tonight and telling us about your book, Refuse to Be Done. We enjoyed it very much. And all I can say to you is, write on.
Thanks so much, Liz.
Thank you, Matt.
Liz, for the win.
You are listening to Write on Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at KFAI.org. I'm Annie Harview. I'd like to thank all of you listening at home for your patience as we experienced a technical difficulty in the first half of the show. We were able to get it revolved, and we appreciate your patience. And we'd also like to thank Matt Bell for all of his wonderful insights about writing and living a writing life. Thanks also to all of you listeners who provide support, whether it's sharing, donations, etc. KFAI would not be possible without you. You can find more news and info about Write on Radio at kfai.org/writeonradio. You can also listen on to your favorite Write on Radio episodes on whatever your favorite podcast app is, whether that's Spotify, iTunes, Google, or Apple.